Thanks everyone for having me, and I'm here today to talk about some forensic accounting issues and some safeguards you can put into your business and some of the things that I see happening. And I did get some questions ahead of time, so how about we talk about them just for a few minutes. And the first question was, how long have you been doing this? And I started doing forensic right out of college with a great firm in Bridgewater. So they were really focused on forensic, which is one thing I wanted to get into. So I didn't go with a big firm like a Price Waterhouse, because I went with a medium-sized firm that was really dealing in specific issues that I wanted to. And I'm glad that I did that. The second question was, is there a way to investigate someone without them knowing it? So, like, for example, we have computer systems that it's very easy to install something they don't know about, like a keylogger, for example. We can have an audit trail of what they're doing on the computer. We can take screenshots without them knowing it every 10, 20 seconds. So if you want to see if someone's surfing the web or doing things they're not supposed to do when they're on the job, that's a really good thing to do. Of course, we always want to have an independent person, yourself or an accountant, be having oversight on a regular basis. Just having that, like my clients usually have me on a monthly basis, and there's a fear of that. You can't, you know, you need to someone to be sitting there knowing, hey, if Chris is going to be coming in and taking a look at things, and they're going to be independently having access to my computer, they're much less likely to see you as a target. So having the oversight is very important. Also, you try to use safeguards in your computer. Like, for example, QuickBooks, for example, a very popular program, there are user access and levels and passwords that I can set up that, oh, you can enter an accounts payable bill, but I can't write a check. You know, so a lot of businesses, you don't do 1,000 transactions a month. So it's I do tell my clients to delegate a clerical function all the time. If you want to sell, you got to be selling. So delegate something if you're not immediately dealing with a client, delegate it. But there's certain things you need to do. You can sign your own checks, right? I can have checks written and left for me once a week to sign, like I do. So there's a bunch of internal controls. I'm going to go over a number of those things too. Like, what's an internal control, even for a small business? It's not just for big business. What can we do to set that up? Question three, if you suspect someone is doing something wrong, should you go to the police right away? The main thing is we want to gather some kind of evidence, right? Because the police can't take hearsay or conjecture. Oh, we see these transactions. Here's a vendor that we know doesn't really exist. And, you know, we're paying them, and, you know, I've never heard of them, and I'm the owner. You know, so we need to gather that kind of evidence, and then we can go to the police. And I'm hired for that kind of thing all the time. We do a lot of embezzlement-related work, working on one with a condo association right now, right, in the area. That's very important that you want to have as much evidence as possible and not accuse anybody of anything. So someone asked, how is it possible to even set something like that up? I think meaning a fictitious employee, or, well, it does happen all the time. In a larger company, I can buy deceased person's social security numbers every day. And so it's a valid social, and if the IRS doesn't realize that the person's deceased, which does happen all the time, they're not notified, then I can put that through the payroll system anytime. And use that person's name, and just have the monies direct deposited into any account I want. And it can go, and sometimes small numbers. So in a larger company, where you have crews of people working or different divisions, it's very easy to put someone in there for $600 a week in location number 5, and no one's the wiser. They don't know. It's just a small number, relatively speaking. So usually, though, it's usually a vendor that is fictitious, because putting an employee on has much more work, right? You need W-4 information, you need a social security number. That's going to be put into the Jersey payroll system every quarter. So it's much easier to be found out that way. So that's why a vendor, we don't have to do that. We just have to put them in the system and say they're a vendor and pay them a check. So that's much more likely to have someone doing that every week and post it to different jobs. Right? You have a big I've worked with this big construction company. They were, you know, there was $100,000 a year going out to a different vendor that was created by the bookkeeper, and it had a nice name to it, you know, Joe's Plumbing. And so they were just posting, you know, 800 here, 900 there to all these different jobs as if it's a subcontractor. And the person even went to the extent of getting insurance so they could so they could have an insurance certificate on file. You know, so they're very crafty. So one of the main things is to have oversight by yourself and have accountants or someone else come in so it's being independently audited on a regular basis if you can. So again, I want to take too much time.
That's
okay. So here's some notes about, in general, about some of these questions. Depending on the number of transactions that you have, there's no reason for a bookkeeper to have check signing authority. There isn't. People usually think, oh, they don't. If I'm only doing 10 to 15 checks a week, I would never have anyone sign my checks. It's not, I have them set up, I have them printed for me, but that's never something they can do. And if they do it, then we know that they're doing something wrong. You don't want to be vague with things that we talked about, setting up expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And we want to separate duties as much as possible and rotate duties, right? So I could have just a few people in the office, but next week you're going to be doing the accounts receivable. And then you're going to be doing the accounts payable next week, right? I want everyone to be shifting and move. There's no reason. Plus, I want them all trained, right? So again, we can restrict people's access and programs and in the office to certain things to stop these things from happening. So now the main thing we want to talk about is internal controls. So what does that mean? Well, an internal control is something that's supposed to want to make standardized processing. So we know someone comes in, we know, hey, here's how you do an accounts payable transaction. So that's part of internal control is, well, how does someone know what to do? Well, we need to have a policy in place to do that. That's very clear, and that's ever-changing and evolving. Right in my office, I have many, many, many codes that we use and systems that are always changing over time to be more efficient. So they're put in place to ensure accuracy and there's seven different categories of internal controls. The first one is separation of duties. Right, so we want to split the responsibility of a transaction. For example, collection of money. So there's many different parts of that. You know, so we're billing the money, we're collecting the money, we're putting it into the system, we're depositing the money. You know, so as many people as we can put in there. Right, I don't want one person handling the cash from start to finish if I can help it. Huh. And it's not that hard to do, even for a small company. And sometimes you have to share the responsibility amongst a few people, but it can be done. It can really help. And also access control. So people have their check stock sitting out, right, where people can get it at any time. It's not locked up. We shouldn't, for example, we don't have to be writing checks every day. Right, I can go into QuickBooks and get checks set up. Like a lot of my clients, listen, I'll have someone ready. I need these 25 checks printed. They can sit in a queue, and my client can go in, put the check stock in, and print them out. Right, so I can have all the work done, 99% of it. But why have someone print the checks when you don't have to? You know, someone else can do that. So that's one of the main things you want to do. I want someone who takes care of the payables and takes care of what checks need to be printed. But that it sits waiting for me to do it. I can print the checks and I have to sign them anyway. And people don't know that sometimes there's proprietary systems. You know, systems for a condo association, for example, one I just went, I'm working on now. You know, your systems have these safeguards you can turn on. People don't know it. Like, people don't know that in a QuickBooks environment, there's a lot of levels of security we can have. Significant. I can restrict Pat. Because I don't know, I don't know if I trust her too much. She just started. You know, oh, she can just do this part of sales, and that's it with her login. I mean, she couldn't open anything else at all. So a lot of systems have that. And we want to make sure that we have physical audits, some kind of oversight externally for the employees to know that someone's coming in to look at everything, and they have access to your computer constantly. So even in a remote way. So if you don't have that, then there's no fear, right? And you become an easy target. So if you do have an accountant, which most of you do, it's worth it to set something up where they're definitely introduced to everybody. And I love to be introduced to everybody, and I smile a lot, and I'm just very exacting about everything, and they know what I can and can't do. And I've been doing technology since the first PC came out in 83. So I'm someone you want to be careful of. All right, so the other thing is we want to have, again, standardized documents and that are used for these transactions, right? We want to have processes, because I need to know if someone deviates, if someone's deviating from something, well, they're really not if I haven't told them what the standard is. Big problem in business. Well, so here's a list of things you need to do and how to handle it. So I need to, once I see someone purposely circumventing my rules, I can fire them immediately. It's very clear. And I tell everyone that, listen, I'm giving you 10 steps. I don't have a 6.5 step. I have 10 steps. So if you're suddenly deviating, and so remember that that's cause for dismissal. We have to be very, 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 very serious to everyone that if you're unsure, you ask me a question. But if I give you a series of things to do, especially in the financial area, and you are purposely going against it because you have to be, because I've gone over it 100 times what you're supposed to do, then that's cause for dismissal immediately. Everyone understands that. So, also on a regular basis, cash, we have to do a reconciliation of cash, right? So people don't do that often enough, right? So what does that mean? Well, I have a certain amount of money in the bank and a certain amount of money in my program, and I have outstanding checks and things like that, but I need to really reconcile, and that gives me a chance to really take a look at the checks that have gone out. So part of your management duties are every month, okay, well, are you looking at every check that was cashed that month? I mean, if you want to find a vendor who doesn't, people aren't looking at these things.
Right.
It doesn't take too long to go through 5 or 6 sets of white sheets at the bank of a Bank of America statement, right, and see that. And also we want to separate, very important to separate payroll from operating. We always want a separate payroll account all the time. It's a zero balance account. Because why is that? A few things. One, when insurance companies come in to audit you, they want to see your payroll account. So why would I want to commingle that with my operating and have a Jersey State auditor or insurance auditor see all that? No, I want to have, listen, no, here's 2 deposits a month for my payroll. All the money went out, started with 0, ended with 0. That's a lot less time. Plus all of that, I don't have to reconcile payroll. I do, but they're all cashed. So why put that in the stream and have all these extra checks? Am I operating? Also, what you want to do, if you have a lot of money coming in all the time, what I tell people to do is, why would you have, like in my business, I have a few business accounts, and I never have where my money is deposited in the same account where my checks are dispersed from. I don't care how big your company is. If someone is possibly getting at your money, well, I just want to have this operating account with just enough money for my cash needs. And that's also the worst that could happen to me. Is someone, I have maybe 10, 15,000 in my account at a given time, and that's it, and everything else has moved out. So, and how does that help? Well, imagine now you're trying to audit your books. Well, I know that deposits are coming in. No one is going to be giving me extra deposits in fraud. So, right? So I have all my money coming in here, and then in account number 1, there's no debit card in that account. There's no checks in that account. There's no online access to that account. I have to actually physically call the bank and tell them to move money and transfer it. So I do that, say, twice a month. Now my operating account, instead of having tons of inputs of receipts, I have 2. And now I have payroll over here. So now all I have in here are 2 deposits and all my disbursements. It's a lot easier than to have a review for yourself of where your money's going. That's what I want to know. And so I try to make things easy so you will take the time to do it. People get exhausted looking at bank statements. But if I could make your operating account for this purpose less, great. It's just disbursements, 2 deposits. You'll take the time. And it's safe, right? You should never also, from a liability perspective, something separate. The main account, the main company you have is what would be sued if you're going to be sued for liability, right? Like for example, you could be sued. Or if you put up the wrong curtain, I'm coming after you, right? So you want to make sure that account has as little in it as possible, because at any given moment, that's my asset, right? So let's say that I have $1 million in my business account and I get sued. Well, at any moment, when even if it's a frivolous case, someone can, through discovery, see what my assets were at that moment. And so they could see a deep pocket. So we want any business, so I want to move money. I move money out constantly to my personal account and keep just enough in here, like I said, even with the revenue side. So that's a very important thing to remember, is that if I only have $10,000 at 8 o'clock in the morning when something happens and I'm sued, okay, great. That's just all these important things you could put in. I had this. This is the memo that made Mike want me to come. This Bernie memo. And is it happening to you? And just a few things here. Is anyone in a partnership with anybody? A business partnership? Okay, your husband. Okay, you too. Right. So, if you have a partnership, it's very important. You need to have an operating agreement and a partnership agreement. So I won't even deal with the partnership unless that's in place, because that's the most important thing, because that's really a dissolution agreement, right? So I need to know, what are the duties, what's going to happen. So it's very important to have a partnership agreement, even on a deal-by-deal basis sometimes, right? Some other things that... A way that a bookkeeper or someone can hurt you is that they're putting a check in QuickBooks and it's to this vendor and it's this amount. But don't forget, the actual check could be written to them. Right? Just because it says Joe's company does not mean that's what the check was written for. People don't realize that. It could be a completely separate thing. That happens every day. So that's why we need to really go through our checks. And especially checks over a certain amount. So, for example, I suggest any check written for over $500, for example, every month, you are going into the system and you're making sure that things match. You know, and let them know you're doing that. The more they know that that's happening, the less they're going to attempt to defraud you. There's no doubt about it. And these are not hard things to do. They're not hard things to let the staff know that there's a lot of oversight on what they're doing constantly. Like I said, partnership agreements, there's a million things I could talk about. But anyway, if you have any questions, you want me to send this to you or give you some advice, or just give me a call and tell me what systems you have, I would definitely give you some really good structure and things to do that will...
I have a question.
Sure.
Now you mentioned that you move money out of your business account to your personal account. Do you do that as payroll? Do you do that just as a transfer?
Just a loan in and out, right? So it's a due to or from Chris Whalen, due to or from officer, and it's not income going out, it's an income coming in.
Okay.
So I move it, and you also want your assets, right? I don't want my company, my main company doesn't own anything. I have a building, I own properties, things like that, but my business owns nothing. At any given day, I have my cash in the account, and that's it. I rent my office equipment from a company I set up for myself. I pay rent there. My car's in my name. Right, so you want to have your base company where you could have exposure for anything. You want to have no assets at all.
I have a comment and a question. My comment was that when I read your blog, and I hope everybody got a chance to read it or at least will, you know what jumped out at me was that, again, I come from before I came into my family business, from really big corporations. And your blog made me realize, you think that in a big corporation with hundreds of thousands of employees, it's very easy for this to happen because, it's easy to get lost when you're in accounting, you're a bookkeeper in a big company. But your blog made me realize that even as a small business owner, in the small business, the boss or you tend to give the people who work for you even more responsibility. You get to trust them more. You rely on them more, and you know what? That's really where
right. This
stuff can happen.
The larger the company, the more I can separate duties. So in a bigger company,
really
it's already there.
That way. You would think in the smaller business, you would see it first because you're working close to them, but not really. When you're trusting them and they have all the logins and you're going to handle the finances and you're going to handle the... You know what I mean? And I didn't really ever thought that way until I read your blog. Really, it made me do a lot of thinking. I like you. I keep $10,000 in my Wait No More Diet Center account, and
right.
The rest of it is in cash in my safe deposit box.
Right. Right, so if
but
you,
anyway, and
but,
you didn't
but,
hear that.
But you can imagine...
Oh, sorry.
If you can imagine now that we have... I want to limit my exposure for a number of things, and that's by having one account with a certain amount of money in it that's going for my day-to-day. So how much can someone defraud me at one time?
Right.
But that, I want to limit, so there's no way that anyone's having access to the lion's share of money, number one, and then putting these safeguards in place really can stop people from defrauding.
But I just have one question. When you spoke earlier about, I forgot one of your points, and it made me write this question down. If you was it about the police and gathering evidence and all that?
Right.
If you suspect somebody in your office, whatever, some red flag is going up, do you have to have, you have to have cause? If you're a business owner, can you go into an employee's computer at any time?
Well, you back up. Your employee doesn't have a computer at work. There is no such thing, unless they brought it in themselves.
Oh, I see.
That's also, remember, and Pat will agree with this at her level, we need to have agreements that are signed with employees when they come into the organization. There's another thing that big companies do, I urge small companies to do, and I have great templates for this, that they need to understand that people in my office know there's surveillance 24/7 on everything they're doing in my office. I can see everything they're doing. So they have to agree to that. It's my computer. It's my office, and so they understand that.
So basically, if you have computers in your office, but somebody say they really liked working on their MacBook instead, you wouldn't let them use their laptop in your office unless it was you owned it.
No,
right?
Again, it's my system. I control it with my computer people and my safeguards there, so I don't let a foreign machine come into my office. Like in my office, for example, no one can log in anything personal from any of my machines. They'll get fired immediately. Ever. Never. They're not allowed. I do have a Chromebook I have in my office that, an extra one that if you need to check something, I don't mind. If you need to make a phone call, you need to check something, but it's never, if I catch someone doing anything personal on my machine, if it's Christmas, you need to buy a present. I log on here.
Yeah,
But you can't even bring your machine in my office and get on my Wi-Fi. I don't allow it. So setting up expectations. If you give someone this kind of employment agreement, even my college kids have to sign it. Wait a second, you can't do that. It's like, oh, really?
I never thought about that. Nowadays, so they can't even log in with their phones or anything in your office.
Yeah, I had an incident. It wasn't anything it was in some ways financial, but somebody who was about to leave the organization because of new transition of new person was actually trying to make some deals with another organization outside of us. For stuff that we actually did. You know what I'm saying? Like they're going to go work for somebody else. And the way I tracked it was I said, that's it. Let me see all the emails from the last whatever. And stupid sent the emails to these people. And I could see proof that this was going on. And was.
You also want to have, there's programs put in your computer. If someone puts a flash drive in one of my computers, it sets off alarms. And it's not hard to do. This is not thousands of dollars of work, but you can at least if you let people know what structure you have and what kind of safeguards you have and it's in this employment agreement, believe me, they will want some people appreciate it, but also some people who might have nefarious ends in mind, they'll know that you can't be you're not as much a target as someone else, and they'll move along and go find some other company to work for.
They'll say you don't trust me. Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
That's okay. You say it again with context. You say it with a smile.
Exactly.
We don't trust anybody. It's not just you.
Did that make sense? Is that okay?
Yeah, that was excellent.
Thank you very much. Very, very good.